Education Subcommittee, and calling the committee to order, and I'm going to call up Margie Lau, who is going to briefly respond to some of the queries that we had yesterday on the shared responsibility model. And I want to remind committee members of a couple of things. Number one is the chair's plan is to go into work session and vote on this budget today. And Representative Edwards is leaving at 4:30, so we need to do it before then. And it's going to take a little while to do so. So please feel free to ask questions, but only essential questions. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Margie Lau. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Margie Lau, policy advisor in the governor's office. And what Steve and Eric are handing around at the moment is some of the pieces that have to do with how we built the model that we're using to do the projections for the shared responsibility proposal. The real details the committee will get into when you receive Senate Bill 334, which is the enabling legislation for this proposal. And I know it's in the queue in terms of work that the committee will receive. Steve and I spent at least 30 minutes on the phone this morning working through the model, and I mentioned to some of you yesterday that I thought perhaps the numbers that we were looking at in the model were more full-time equivalents, and the numbers that Steve had were headcount. Well, it turns out that both numbers are headcount. But what we cannot find within the model, and it's a series of about a dozen very complex spreadsheets, we cannot find where the missing students are. So we're not sure. But what I've provided for you is the list of the variables that are built into the model. And what the assumptions are, or at least the basis for the assumptions that we're working with presently. When we first talked about the Student Assistance Commission budget, and I shared with the committee the information about shared responsibility, I had a couple of slides that talked about the various sources of assumptions. Some of them are federal, some of them are driven by the student and their family, and some of them are the state's decisions. And so the cover page here lists each of those and what those assumptions are. To take a few examples, the Pell Grant Award is presently $4,310. That's a maximum award. And depending upon a student's resources, they can get that much if they're eligible. And that's based on the federal arithmetic that goes into the federal financial aid application. That number is currently proposed to increase in both proposals from the executive and the legislative branch at the federal level. But in talking with our D.C. Consultants, they suggest that we should not assume anything in terms of federal budget changes and to not build in even the lowest of those numbers. But as an example, if the lowest of those numbers were adopted, based on what the model tells us, we'd pick up another $5.6 million in savings, which could be applied to helping more students. Numbers that we know that have already changed since the model was built have to do with the number of students who have chosen to go to our colleges and universities in Oregon. The independent colleges enrollment is up slightly, and the opportunity grant recipients are up slightly. The number of students who are attending our community colleges and our Oregon University System schools are down slightly, and the FAFSA filers for those institutions are down slightly. And they look like they're going to be down again this next year. Now, with the advent of the shared responsibility model, we'll bring to those dynamics. I wish I were an oracle and I were able to predict the future, but I have to use the data that I have and do the best job I can with that. And that's built into this model. The model is a proxy for what the real machinery will do. That real machinery is presently being built by staff on loan to the Student Assistance Commission from the Oregon University System. And there are staff working in Eugene today on developing the actual computer systems that will develop this particular grant process. What we do with that is we will run real FAFSA data from this year through that real application, and then we'll see what the real information is going to do in the real system, and then we'll have much better information in which to make future policy choices from. And we would hope that we'd have that information in early fall so that we'd be able to look at that before we get into an awarding season, which will start next January. If you turn on to the next pages, this is actually what they call the consult page. And this is where some people have referred to this model as my model. And I wish I had the skills to build something that's as elaborate and thoroughly thought out as this is, but I'm kind of like the mechanic who's adjusting the timing on a car. You know, I haven't designed the car. I couldn't build the car, but I'm able to adjust it and to interpret some of the information from it. And so what I've done with the model that was first developed and recommended by the Access and Affordability Working Group is I've gone in and updated these numbers that are in the upper boxes. For example, the recognized tuition and fees. We've updated those numbers, which were first done last year, for last year's tuition and fees, for what is projected in the governor's recommended budget for what tuition and fees will be. So we've added in the 3.4% per year increase that's assumed in the governor's budget for the Oregon University System, assumed a similar increase in tuition fees for the community colleges. And then we make the same change for the independent colleges because the recommendations from the work group were that the independent college awards would be capped at what the Oregon University System award levels were. So they're virtually the same. I've also updated projections in terms of what the student contribution will be because that was assumed to be the Oregon minimum wage because we're indexed to the Portland CPI. I said, you know, it would be realistic to expect that those CPI adjustments will be similar for the 2 years in between the first iteration of the model and the point in which we'll actually implement it. So those are the types of modifications that I've made so far to the model. I've not adjusted any of the underlying architecture behind it. Steve and Mr. McGee and I had a telephone conference call with Brian Prescott, the designer of this model, in March, I think it was. And he went back and looked at it, and he said that he thought, based on information out of what's called the federal NIPSAS survey, and Oregon was a state that was oversampled in that survey, that the model needed to be adjusted because more full-time students were likely to file for financial aid than part-time students. And that had not been taken into account in the earlier edition of the model. In the earlier editions of this model, there was no adjustment factor. You'll see in the third set of boxes down the page that there are a number of different rationing devices that are listed here. And these are ones that we put into play. That adjustment that was made in terms of the percentage of students who would likely to file for aid pushed the cost above what was in the governor's recommended budget and in what was in the co-chair's recommended budget. And in order to adjust that, I changed this FAR column adjustment factor to a 0.2. Now, the way that particular adjustment factor works is that it's a multiplier against the expected family contribution that is a byproduct of the federal application for aid. And so if a family's expected family contribution is $100, that 0.2 factor in that iteration would have raised that expectation to $120 for purposes of calculating the state grant. And if it were $1,000, it would have raised it to $1,200, hence its progressivity. We think that's the best rationing tool to use because of that. If a student's EFC is zero, they have no adjustment to their grant. So it still leaves the greatest assistance to those with the greatest need.
Ms. Lau, can we wrap it up pretty soon. I know it's...
Sure.
You know, and you had mentioned the 334, the policy vehicle, is going to be coming through this committee, too, so...
Right. So as you can see here, I updated it for the Pell amount. There are a number of other rationing tools. We can talk about that when the committee gets Senate Bill 334. And I'd be glad to answer any questions that people have today or offline or when we get to that bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Morgan.
Thank you. When do you anticipate that OSAC is going to be awarding the first grants?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, it is our...
In the shared responsibility model, not the first year of the program.
The actual first payments will go out to students in August of 2008. But students will start filing for that aid in as early as January 2008.
Okay, January 2008 will be when they'll be filing applications.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, that's when they'll first begin filling out the federal financial aid application for the coming academic year.
So, between January, if I might,
sure, follow up, sure.
Between January and August, the FAFSA information will be coming back to OSAC, and OSAC will go through some kind of a process to make awards, and then the awards will start going out in August, the first of the financial awards in the program.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the awards actually go to the schools, and the schools basically deposit it into the students' account.
So that means then that we're going to pass this budget and it'll be effective in June of 2007?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I believe the effective date of the bill is June 2008 because of it not being effective for the first academic year of the biennium.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is this is going to be a substantial change in the way that this program operates. And what I'm curious about is the transition plan here, because it doesn't seem like there's going to be a lot of time to implement some kind of a plan to educate financial aid folks about the nature of this program, to educate students and potential students that this exists and what the dynamic of it is. And I'm wondering if you can give us some information about, from the budgeting perspective, what's budgeted to do this transition inside the agency, and then from the more pragmatic perspective, what the program is that we're funding that's going to ramp this up so that in January 2008 there's an educated group of service deliverers and service receivers, and we won't run into the same problem that we had when we added all that revenue to the opportunity grants and we didn't have any process to let people know that all this was happening.
Mr. Chair,
before you answer that, I want to open up our work session on House Bill 5044, and then we'd love to have you answer that, and then we're going to move on to start to go through the actual OSAC budget so we can vote on it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, you may recall from yesterday's hearing that there was $650,000 approximately in OSAC's operating budget to provide resources to do several things. One, to build this new data system that they'll need in order to do the awarding, and a more complete forecasting process for future application years. Second, to put in place a process to help reach out to both students and financial aid offices and high schools so that there can be a better awareness about how the program works. And a third component that we hope to do is to build an online estimator, so that students can go in and take the information from their FAFSA that they've completed and put it through a model in order to be able to have a sense of what they might be able to expect from the Oregon Opportunity Grant under the new model.
May I ask a question, Mr. Bender?
Oh, sure.
Mr. Bender, do we have, for the $650,000 that she's looking at, is that broken down in how those expenses are allocated and what the deliverables are?
Yes, we do have information on that. Of the $650,000, approximately, or exactly $250,000, is to provide funding for our contracting fees. If the Oregon Student Assistance Commission chooses to enter into a contract for consultants to assist in the development and implementation of the model. The remaining funds are primarily designed to support additional personnel that will be working toward implementation and management of the opportunity grant program as it is expanded into the shared responsibility model. The LFO recommendation is to approve, we recommend that you do approve all that has been requested in this area, and in particular the additional staffing that this would include is, and I'll show you where to find this if you're interested in looking at the detail in your book. In your, if you do have your governor's recommended budget Bible book with you, you will see that the, on page 107, that this includes three positions and 3.4 FTE in order to help administer this program. These would include program analysts who would work on the computer system, ensuring that the programming of the computer will correctly calculate the awards. As you know now, there are only a few different award levels under this proposed program. Essentially, every student's award level would have to be calculated separately. So that is part of the staffing, and there's also additional support staff in the agency budget.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, I'm glad to be a resource to any of the committee members who have questions outside of the committee hearing time or when we get to the bill.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay. Mr. Bender, take us through,
sure,
I think, where we left off.
Mr. Chair, yesterday we had started to go through the LFO recommendation on the in the beige colored sheets of the handout that was distributed yesterday. And what I would like to do is to continue to do that and to also note for you to please look for a copy of something that was distributed today. It's a one-page sheet titled Proposed Budget Notes for House Bill 5044. In addition to the recommendations on the beige pages, we are going to be recommending that you approve these three budget notes with this budget, and we will go through those at the time. I believe, Mr. Chair, correct me if I'm wrong, that I'd gotten through pretty much recommendation three, which was package 101 for the opportunity grant, and had discussed in some detail also package four, which was the Aspire program. In fact, we had talked about that for quite some time. I believe I can begin with package 103.
I believe that's correct, because I remember you distinctly talking about grants and Aspire expiring. So, yes, 103, I think that's where we are.
Okay, package 103 is a package that is in the governor's budget that is designed to increase financial support for the Office of Degree Authorization. The Office of Degree Authorization faces a situation where the funds that have been supporting that those operations are of a one-time nature and are no longer available in the 07-09 biennium. The governor requested $247,878 general fund to maintain the operations of the ODA, Office of Degree Authorization, and also to apply some or provide for some additional staffing over current levels. The LFO recommendation is to approve $200,000 in general fund and add a total of 1.1 FTE, which would just restore existing positions in the Office of Degree Authorization to full-time status and provide approximately $14,400 in additional general fund for AG charges.
If there are no questions, I'd like to go on to package 104, which is recommendation number 6 on page 4 in the beige-colored sheets.
This is the last time you're going to do beige.
I can do beige. Package 104 is a request for $14,734 general fund, $431,652 other funds, and three positions, which is actually 3 1/4 FTE, to support the agency's efforts to improve the administration of scholarship programs provided by private donors and to solicit new and existing donors for additional scholarship support. The other funds that we're talking about, the $431,000, will primarily be from fees that OSAC has been charging private donors for their scholarship administration. We recommend approval with two modifications. And the first modification is that you reduce the other funds expenditure limitation increase by $112,267. That would comprise two adjustments. One would be a reduction of $82,267 in temporary appointments, because we believe that with the additional staffing that this package would provide, the agency would be able to save funds that it is currently spending for temporary appointments, and also eliminate $30,000 in other funds that were placed in this package erroneously. So those are the that's the recommendation for package 104. For package 105, this will take a little bit more explanation than the other ones have today. Package 105 is the Jobs Plus Scholarship Package. And the reason this takes explanation is this is a package, a policy package in the budget that's associated with a policy bill that's in Ways and Means. The policy bill is House Bill 2246. And what House Bill 2246 does is it modifies or reforms the Jobs Plus Scholarship Program. Jobs Plus is a program that's administered by the Department of Human Services and that provides services to employees who are entering the workforce. And one of the services that is provided under the Jobs Plus program is that clients in this program become eligible to receive scholarship funds equal to $1 for every hour that they work in the program while they are a client in Jobs Plus. The reason why this becomes relevant to the OSAC budget is these funds have been underutilized by Jobs Plus clients. Most of the funds that are available for these clients for scholarship purposes are never used. The scholarship funds that are never used then are transferred after a period of time to help finance the Oregon Opportunity Grant. That's the default usage of them if they are not used for by the Jobs Plus recipients. We would expect to get about $309,000 through this process for the Opportunity Grant under current law. However, House Bill 2246, which was introduced basically at the request of the Ways and Means Committee last session, Ways and Means looked at the Jobs Plus program and asked the agency to come up with reforms that would increase the utilization by the clients. And House Bill 2246 is designed to do that. Fundamentally, it does this by instead of it allows the funds that are being generated through this dollar per hour to be used to create bigger scholarships for fewer participants. So instead of each participant maybe being eligible for $500 or what have you, the money could be combined. And for those recipients who want to attend educational institutions, they would be able to have a larger award. And the concept is, or the expectation is, that the money would then be used for these recipients and would not be available for the Opportunity Grant. Although we know that this measure was introduced basically at the request of Ways and Means, we do recommend that you deny this package and that you do not approve House Bill 2246, because We know the state in this budget is trying very hard to make a very large increase in funding for opportunity grants, and we don't think it's wise at this time to take away any sources of money that are available to support that. The other recommendation is that we further recommend, and you can see this is in the bolded language in number 7, about 3/4 of the way in. We also recommend that you further reduce general fund appropriation for the opportunity grant by $309,300. These monies are no longer needed, in essence, because the Jobs Plus monies will come in of that amount instead. Okay, Package 106. Package 106, we're recommending that you approve with modifications. Package 106 provided $39,025 general fund and increased the other fund's expenditure limitation by $39,025 to accommodate expenditures to replace, for the ongoing replacement of the agency's computer hardware and office equipment as it becomes out of date. We're recommending that you essentially remove the general fund component and only approve the other fund's expenditure limitation increase. And our reason for this is that these are ongoing expenditures. They're not specific expenditures that have been identified. And under the LFO recommendation, there does remain over $2.6 million in general fund support for agency operations, and we do believe that the agency should manage these budget needs within that amount. Package 107 is called Agency Facilities and Internal Audit, but actually the package only deals with internal audit. What this package would do is it funds the establishment of a 0.5 FTE internal auditor position in the agency. This is, it's actually a full-time, I believe it's a full-time internal auditor for 1 year, but I'm not positive about that. But this is to conform to a Department of Administrative policy that requires agencies with expenditures in excess of $100 million per biennium to maintain an internal audit capacity. With the expansion of the shared responsibility model, this agency will be crossing over that threshold, and we believe it is wise to follow policy and to establish internal audit capability to audit these funds flow in that agency.
Representative Barnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question on that package. Will this then allow the agency to sample their own transactions and to determine whether they're handling them correctly? Is that part of what that job would be?
I believe that's, yes, that is correct.
And I would say, given what we're trying to do with this very different system, that's very prudent, at least at the early stages of the process.
Recommendation 10 relates to Package 108. Package 108 included an expansion of funding for the rural health care program. This is the program that repays student loans for health care practitioners that qualify in rural areas. The governor had proposed a 138% funding increase in this program and additional staff support to operate the program at the increased levels. LFO is recommending that this program be approved, that this package be denied, and that the program therefore be maintained at the current service level or central budget level, which would be about a 3% increase over the 2005-07 biennium level. Package 109 is the final package here. It relates to the student child care program. I know we've had some discussion of that here in this committee. The program is being transferred. Or the proposal was to transfer the program to this budget, to this agency from DHS. LFO is recommending that you deny deny funding for this program. The effect of that would be that it would be eliminated. There would be no funding left in any budget for that program because it's not being included in DHS. What we are recommending is that in lieu of maintaining a separate student aid program for student parents, which of course would have administrative costs of its own, that you direct OSAC to review the impact of child care expenses on the educational access for student parents, and to incorporate reasonable adjustments into the shared responsibility model to account for child care expenses. So essentially, it would be merged into the shared responsibility model, and when the family contribution component is being calculated, it would be noted if the student has child care expenses, that could be taken into account.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This particular package denial is very troubling to me. I think, unless I misunderstand, it leaves a gap between, even if, in fact, it is able to be accounted for in the new model, it leaves a year-long gap. We have students who have been in school now for a couple of years, have incurred substantial debt, who depend upon the child care program, and we're talking about leaving them high and dry next school year. I don't think we can do that. At minimum, we need to have some kind of bridge funding to take care of those students.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. And I think, Representative Barnhart, I think today you're going to see a motion to put the funding back.
Thank you. That's even better.
I'm sorry I didn't communicate that.
The big branch.
I like it.
Representative Morgan.
I'm very glad to hear that we're going to restore the funding to this package. I think that making some kind of an assumption that that this can somehow be taken into account by the changes in the shared responsibility model are adding a huge amount of uncertainty, I'm sure, to everyone who has been counting on and drawing on these funds. There's no guarantee that people that have been accessing child care services through student child care will even be getting opportunity grants or taking part in the shared responsibility model. So I think that it's definitely $1 million that's well invested in restoring this package.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator,
are you ready for a motion on the LFR recommendations? Or do you want to go through the other aspects? Do you want to do the budget notes and performance measures separately?
Mr. Chair, members, if it is okay, I think it would probably, there are three proposed budget notes. Two of them relate to the packages we discussed so far, A and B. I think that we should, I would like to be able to talk about those, and then we can talk about performance measures and budget note C, which relates to those.
Please, thank you.
Okay. LFO is recommending that you approve two budget notes relating to the shared responsibility model and its implementation in order to provide direction for the to the agency as to how to implement this program. Let me first just paraphrase what the budget note A is trying to do before reading it. What the intent of budget note A is designed to do is to indicate that you are funding the shared responsibility model in the second year of the biennium, and that fundamentally it is the agency's responsibility to operate that model within the funding level that you're approving. That you're approving a certain level of funding, and that they are to operate within that level of funding, and that we have certain expectations of what the costs will be for the next biennium. So, Mr. Chair, if I may just read this.
Please do.
What this budget note would say if you approve it is that the approved budget for the opportunity grant fully funds implementation of the shared responsibility model beginning with the 2008-09 academic year. The Commission shall adjust award amounts under the shared responsibility model as permitted by law to ensure that total financial aid awards for the 08-09 academic year, that's the second year of the biennium, not exceed $72 million, which is reflects what I understand is going to be another change to the LFO recommendation that's going to be proposed, or the amount of funds approved for this budget for the 2007-09 biennium that remain after awarding 2007-08 academic year opportunity grants, whichever is less. What this budget note is saying in this first paragraph
is it's setting a maximum limit for cost of the program in 2008-09. It is not setting a floor or a minimum. It's setting a maximum only. And it's saying that the maximum would be $72 million. If you look back here on the handout on page 6, table 3C, table C on page 6, this is what this budget note is referring to. When this was done yesterday, you see there's a shaded row that says policy package 101 at $44 million. And then if you go to the second year funding column, it says that we would expect there to be $73 million in cost the second year. Although it hasn't been proposed yet, I do understand that there is going to be a proposal to fund package 101 at $43 million as opposed to $44 million. If that is approved, then the second year funding would be $72 million instead of $73 million. But that is what this is saying. We've got to keep the costs within $72 million. The second paragraph talks about what the number would be in the right-hand column here, the 09-11 number. And it says the subcommittee understands that the essential budget level for the opportunity grant program for the 2009-11 biennium will be calculated to total twice the projected amount of 08-09 academic year awards, adjusted for any inflation rate applied for cost increases and special payments under the budget instructions governing development of the 09-11 biennium state budget. I think the policy implications of this budget note is to indicate that this program is not, in essence, an entitlement program. It is a student aid program, and that it will be funded, the funding level will be determined by the legislature each session within the budget constraints available to you.
Representative Morgan?
Thank you. Mr. Bender, I recognize that in the first year that the shared responsibility is going to be implemented, there will be $1 million less in the program. The budget notes says the commission shall adjust award amounts under the shared responsibility model as permitted by law. What is permitted by law?
Well, actually, that little phrase doesn't really need to be in there because, of course, the commission can't do anything that's not permitted by law. But the reason why I added that in there is to clarify that when Senate Bill 334 comes to this committee, that will indicate the parameters or define the parameters of what the shared responsibility model needs to look like. And when that bill comes, you would be able to, for example, if you wanted to make sure that certain adjustments were not made, you could, in Senate Bill 334, prohibit, for agency from doing them, the commission from doing them. So because we don't have, or you don't have the bill before you right now that's establishing the program and the parameters of the program, what that phrase is designed to do is to let it be known that once those are established, the commission will still be responsible for keeping the program within cost, whatever you determine in terms of Senate Bill 334 when you work on that bill.
But at this point, we don't know what the impact is, especially what the moving parts are that can be adjusted in the actual framework of the,
yes,
the awards.
And Ms. Lau was saying at the beginning in her testimony of some of the things that can be adjusted and the components of the model that the governor's office would recommend adjusting. And under Senate Bill 334, she's absolutely correct. These are items that could be adjusted. I think that when the Senate Bill 334 comes before you, this will be an opportunity to look in more depth at those various alternatives, that those various elements that can be adjusted, and to determine which of those you want to make legislative policy law.
But at that point, the budget bill would be out of our grasp.
That's correct. Yes.
Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I think there are a couple items obviously, one of the things that would have to be considered is whether to reduce the number of grants is one possibility, and by that you'd be affecting the income levels at which you would give grants, or to reduce the amount of the grants, which probably you might have some issues there with fewer meetings in the original premises that the model was built on. The other issue, though, that would be present is that right now, actually, I think most of them are probably in by now. It's been a long time since. But we have a lot of student FAFSAs that are in. They're getting awards for the coming year. That will be coming soon. We get a lot of information in. By February next year, I think we will have some coming in. By then, February, January. We would be able to track literally, in a sense, where the people are in terms of where they'll show up in income levels, which will give us a clear, probably, indication of whether what kind of a job the Student Assistance Commission will have to keep it within that budget parameters. Because I think that's information that we won't have until then, because as those are actually filled out and sent in, they give us real information about what the income levels are of prospective students and current students in our institutions. So, thank you.
Mr. Bender, please proceed.
Budget Note B also relates to the shared responsibility model, and I think touches on some of the comments that the Vice Chair just made. Budget Note B would require that no later than February 2008, which is, of course, the month for which the 2008 session is now being planned, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission shall report to the Joint Interim Committee on Ways and Means or Emergency Board on progress toward implementing the shared responsibility model. This report shall include detailed information on projected award levels for the 08-09 academic year. As of that point in time, you can clearly expect a progress report, and the commission will almost certainly have developed some set of proposed award levels, probably with some instructions to schools that if the funding is insufficient, we'll prorate this or of some manner, but we will be able to get some kind of information at that point as to what the proposed grant awards would be.
I appreciate this budget note because I think it also gives ample opportunity for OSEC to report on how they're doing with educating the community that gives out the grants and educating students as to that this exists. I have huge concerns about trying to avoid the situation that we got into with the opportunity grants in the last go round, where there just wasn't enough of a marketing program to make people aware of these things. So I would also hope that along with the detailed information about the populations and the award levels, that there would also be some pretty detailed information about the whatever this program is going to be that's going to educate the financial aid folks and the using community about what this program is all about.
Well, so noted, yes.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chairman, would it be possible to have Mr. Bender go through the performance measures also?
I think that would be wise.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
Well, that relates to performance measures. So I think it would be best to actually look at the performance measures first. Again, in the packet that was distributed to you yesterday, performance measures are the third item in this packet, and they begin about three quarters of the way through. The first page looks like this. And the pages are numbered starting with page 1 and continuing through page 15. These are performance measures that are being proposed by OSAC for a number of their activities. These performance measures were reviewed by JLAC during the interim, and there's been considerable discussions with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee on these performance measures during the interim. I would like to comment on a number of things about these performance measures. If you start looking at these, you'll see that for some of these performance measures,
There is no data or no targets available that have been submitted by the agency. So, for example, if you look at page 11, you'll see that for performance measure number 13, completion rate for part-time students, there are no data or targets available. This continues for a number of the performance measures when you go on to page 12, 13, etc. Ideally, we would have hoped to have this information available by this time, but because it is not available now, that is part of the reason we have, I'm proposing budget note C for your consideration. Another item to note is that none of these performance measures specifically address the impact or performance of the shared responsibility model. There are performance measures dealing with the Oregon Opportunity Opportunity Grant Program as a whole, but of course there were no performance measures specifically proposed during the interim for the shared responsibility model because it was not law at that time. And we're recommending that they come back with a performance measure, at least one, to track the performance of that shared responsibility model. So what we would recommend is that you approve these with budget note C. And budget note C would say that no later than February 2008, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission shall report to the Interim Joint Committee on Ways and Means or Emergency Board for its approval of actual data and proposed targets for approved key performance measures. Additionally, the Commission shall include in this report one or more key performance measures with proposed targets intended to measure the impact of the adoption of the shared responsibility model.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you. Was there any intention in the budget note to have this date at the time of the next legislative session? If so, would delivery of this on February 28th fulfill the intent of what we want, or do we want it here before we leave the building or potentially leave the building?
The intent, Representative, yes, is that this information would be available for the legislative session to review. And as Senator Devlin is recommending that the date be clarified to no later than February 1st, 2008.
I kind of thought maybe that's
yes, thank you, Representative Jensen.
Thank you.
I would then, given that suggestion, I believe it would be a good amendment to Budget Note B as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Senator Devlin? Are you ready for a motion, Mr.
Yes,
Chairman?
Ready for motions.
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the LFO recommendations with the following amendments, both the general LFO recommendations, the recommendations for budget notes, and the recommendations for performance measures. To the general LFO recommendations, on page 2, policy option package 101, line 1, change the amount from 44 to 43 million. On page 3, policy option package 102, change the dial to approve at a level of $700,000. LFO staff to work with the agency to determine exactly what that means in terms of modifications in structure. Package 109, move from approval or from denial to approval at a level of $900,000. And then in both budget notes, budget note B and budget note C, changing the date from February 2008 to February 1st, 2008. And this will approve the general recommendations as amended, the budget notes, and the performance measures.
Senator Devlin has moved the LFO recommendation with the following changes. Page 2, policy option package 101, line 1, changing the number from 44 to $43 million. Excuse me. Policy option package 102, changing denial to approval at the level of $700,000. Policy option package 109, from deny to approve, to $900,000, and on budget notes B and C, change or add from February 1st, 2008, specifying the particular day in February. Any discussion? Mr. Bender, where did I?
No.
Okay.
I just ask, Mr. Chair, that you put on the record something that I know is implied, but that both of those dollar figures that were moved, the $700,000 for Aspire and the $900,000 for the child care credit, that both of those represent general fund.
That is correct. And that was the intent of my motion.
Okay. For the record. So, discussion, Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do I understand then that with the $4 million reduction in policy option package 101, we're absorbing 700 plus 900 for 96, so that leaves an excess amount? And some discussion as to where that will be directed.
Senator Devlin, did you want to?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have been assured by both co-chairs that that amount will stay within the education budget. I think they're currently trying, you know, Senator Morse, I have to be as truthful as I am truthful. They are trying to resolve an issue over the mentoring program of where that's funded. And so, but we've been assured that the money stays with us.
Yeah, thank you. So, thank you, Senator Devlin. Further discussion. Are you pointing?
No, I'm.
Okay. Representative Barton, I don't think you're pointing.
No, thank you. I'm confused, and I'd like to get the confusion cleared up, and then I'd like to perhaps talk to the motion. The first question I have on my to settle my confusion is: this is the motion that deals with the issue in the entirety. Essentially, except for the motion, of course, to send the bill on to the committee.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. The second piece, I'm wondering where you get the excess. As I read, and it's probably simply an error on my part. As I heard the motion, it was to reduce the policy package from $44 million to $43 million. And that's $1 million, not $4 million. Where did I miss it?
The original governor's recommended budget was $47 million.
Ah, thank you. That answers that. And then just briefly to the motion, and maybe to the motion that's coming up to send the bill on to the Ways and Means Committee. I am disturbed by the fact that I think these budgets are coming up in the wrong order. I am concerned because if we fail to adequately fund the university core budget or the community college core budget, we run the risk, with passing this budget out, of essentially luring students in with the promise of financial aid, getting students to take adverse financial positions on their own behalf, thinking that they have a college courses to take, and then find that the college courses are not there. I'm going to vote for this motion and also for the motion to send the bill on to the committee today. But it's because I believe that this committee and the Ways and Means Committee are going to figure out a way to fund the core programs. We're not even close yet to funding the core programs. And I tell you, the last thing that we should tell a poor Oregonian, financially not well-off Oregonian, is here is some money we can help you get to school. Go borrow some more money so you can actually do the program. And then, when they arrive at school, have them discover that the classes they need are not available because they're full or because they're not offered until next year, because the core budget isn't funded. That's a big worry for me. I think it's something that needs to be cleared up. And I would prefer to have those other budgets dealt with before we deal with this one. I understand, for reasons that I don't understand, that we're going to deal with them out of order.
and that disturbs me, frankly. I'm willing to give you a vote to get this one out, but it's with the understanding we're actually going to make the fixes we need to make in those core budgets so that when those students arrive on campus, there will be an instructor, a classroom, and a class for them to take.
Thank you, Representative. And if I could just respond briefly, it is the chair's intention, certainly, and I agree with everything you've said. Absolutely. And I've been struck by how advocates for the Oregon University system and community college system are very eager to implement the shared responsibility model. You know, as this committee heard so many stories of the level of student indebtedness by the time they graduate. But you're absolutely right. And I've seen this just in my teaching at PCC, where we've cut classes, we've cut sections, and so it takes students longer to get through the program, and that's completely unacceptable. So I think we have a lot of support on this budget for on this committee for post-secondary education, and those budgets are coming, and I think there's a commitment here to do much better. I don't know that we'll get to the level that all of us would like, but I think we're going to be working those budgets, and with the help of both you and Senator Deckert, there might even be some more funds available. That's a little rumor that I've heard. So, but I appreciate. I do think the combination, and we have to have a combination. I think that's your main point, of helping students in terms of affordability and access, plus actually funding both the capital and the operations is what we have to do. We have to do both.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, one final comment that I neglected to make.
Yeah.
This is a great plan. I like it a lot. It will help for those students who have trouble getting access to our system, which has tuition, which I think we all agree is much too high. This will help. But it only works if we actually fund the core. That was the point I was making earlier. I don't want anybody to hear me say, but I don't like the program. I like it a lot.
Thank you, Representative. Senator Starr.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in the same vein, I think Representative Barnhart reiterated the statement that Senator Deckard made yesterday, my comments would echo those exact same sentiments, but I've come to a different conclusion and recollect our conversation on the House floor this morning. I think that
House floor?
Yes, I was on the House floor this morning.
He came to visit.
I thought he was in the wrong chamber.
Well, there was a long debate in the Senate for some on some bill of some import, but I didn't stick around to listen to it all. But of our conversation, where I believe that these budgets are interconnected, and there are takes and puts as we try to move budgets. We're moving some budgets. There's some dollars out of this budget. We're not sure where they're going. They're going somewhere. There's some indication, perhaps, that they go to the mentoring program, but that's pretty clear. I believe, and I understand that you're under pressure to move the budgets forward, but I believe that we could move all four of the major budgets in one work session if we had all the pieces put together and knew where the money is going to get spent and where they're going to be shifted between budgets. I'm in the unenviable or enviable position, however your point of view is, of not having to vote for this budget today because I'm not a member of the majority, and I won't. I'm gonna vote against this, primarily not because I dislike what's in this bill. I actually support the motions that have been made as far as moving monies around. But I just think that we don't have a complete picture, and I think that how this money is going to move between budgets, I think, is important, and I think we need to have that complete conversation and talk about how all the money that is under this subcommittee's responsibility is going to move between budgets. And then I think we could move in one work session with four or five different motions, move these budgets forward, and accommodate, well, I think, what the co-chairs are designing, what the leadership's designing about assigning die date significantly earlier than we've seen in recent legislative sessions. So for that reason, I'm not a member of the majority that kind of has to salute, like I understand that majority members have to. But I think I do still believe that this committee, we're we're of like mind more than we are of disparate minds, I think. And those are my concerns. I believe we can get the job done. It's frustrating that we're doing it the way we are. I understand the pressure you're under.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Just for the record, if you came to one of our caucus meetings, you would see no saluting.
We'll see how the vote goes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
Well, and I'm very gratified at the comments of both Representative Barnhart and Senator Starr, because I think that they really did a good job of outlining what my misgivings are, too. It is extremely frustrating not to see what the whole picture looks like. And to pass a piece out like this, and the shared responsibility model is a huge step forward in education funding policy for the state of Oregon. And it's a concept that we've been waiting for quite some time now. And it is very exciting to see it come into fruition. But it's not without trepidation, because it's clearly got aspects of gelatinous reality to it. And it's something that you can say, yeah, this is how this is going to unfold. I don't think we're anywhere near the place where we're progressing with a degree of certainty here. There's a lot of unknown quantities. We don't know if the model works. We don't know if the projections for populations work. We don't know if the program to educate people on how to use it or what it is what that looks like and how it's going to work. We haven't seen the policy bill yet. We don't know how that ends up being in the whole picture. And we're just talking about the OSAC budget here. We're not talking about the community college budget or the higher ed budget or the Department of Education budget. And we also aren't talking about the human services arena or the public safety arena. There's just a huge lack of information here about where the goalposts are and what we're actually going to be asked to be voting on in a package. And I very much hear what Senator Starr is saying, is that absent the clarity of this information, it is very difficult to do anything more than philosophically support the concepts. And I absolutely support the concept of the shared responsibility model. And emotionally and intellectually, I think that it is going to be a great help in retention and getting students to the goalposts, getting them to a degree. But I have no idea practically how this is going to unfold and how this is going to operate. And it is with the same kind of, it's a disappointment to me that I can't wholeheartedly support this budget. But I am going to vote no on the budget, but it isn't because it has bad concepts in it. It's because it has a lack of detail and focus, and because I also lack the big picture that this fits into.
Thank you, Representative. I think Senator Walker was next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I felt that way about a week ago when I led the insurrection, but after we had a great deal of discussion here in this committee, Mr. Bender prepared this list. It is my Bible. I take it with me wherever I go, and I got a better picture of where the money is in these education budgets. I would like to see more. I would like to see more funding for Aspire and student child care. And I understand we're limited with the funds that we have. We actually were quite fortunate to get a revenue enhancement from the forecast. Otherwise, we'd be whining here a lot more than we are today. So I think this is the only way out of an untenable situation. I hope that when we have money in the end, that we look at adding a little bit more to some of these programs that we're not able to fully fund in these budgets that come out of our committee. But I'm quite comfortable. The shared responsibility model is just an incredible novel idea, only tried in one other state, in Minnesota. But I don't think that means that we can't move forward on it. I think as we move along with it, we're going to see lots of adjustments that we need to make. But I think we've laid significant groundwork here. We've shown that the Oregon Opportunity Grant works quite well, and I think we're taking it now into the 21st century with the shared responsibility model, because as you all know, this started out as the Oregon Need Grant, and I'll be 51 next week and was a recipient of that program. So I'm glad to see, here I am in the legislature at age 51, being able to help young college students in the future with the same program that got me started. So I'm there. I'm with you on the budget. And I appreciate that we had the opportunity to get this expanded view. And I'm just put me down for extra money for the programs.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Walker. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Starr has made an excellent suggestion. What we can do to hold this process together and make it work rationally is to go through the very things that we've gone through with the detail and the recommendations regarding the POPs and budget notes and all that for the remainder of the budgets, but let's bring it just to that point of presentation and then come back, as Senator Starr has suggested, in the final action. We have the ability then to wrap everything together, know where the dollars are going, and have the final action happen once we've gone through all these steps and had the discussions, rather than doing it incrementally. I'll be supporting this budget, but I would be hard pressed to support in future budgets absent having that global look at where things are going to fall. But as we all know, once we decide the decision's made, it moves very quickly.
Thank you, Senator Morris. Senator Devlin?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think everybody on this committee actually values every area of education. They wouldn't have requested to be on this committee probably if they didn't. I think we're in a situation now, I think you might be able to tell from this particular budget that the chair and I have worked a great deal with the co-chairs to get some items back into this budget that we didn't think we would have the votes for the budget unless we got them back into the budget. And we're doing that with each budget. I don't think the House would understand this comment, but the Senate would understand this comment. That doesn't mean anything about the House. Don't take that wrongly. But Representative Lizio and I have been meeting on a regular basis for months. But lately, we're starting to be like Senator Bates and Senator Westland. We're practically tied to each other.
That's a scary thought.
That is a scary thought. And to be honest, I think the co-chairs are very much aware that there are problems in this committee when it comes to recommended levels on post-secondary budgets. And they're very much aware that both the chair and the vice chair will be advocating on behalf of the committee for what's necessary in those budgets. And I would encourage any member of this committee to advocate with the co-chairs and advocate with the leadership what should be in these budgets. But one of the things that we probably also need is not just the committee members here and the members on full, but we need the body. The body in both chambers to say that this is a priority that needs to be met before we close the doors here. And I think that's the thing that's going to get the additional numbers that people want in post-secondary budgets. I'm not saying that everybody's ambition is going to be fulfilled, but I'm just saying that that's what's going to actually give us the recognition how important it is to improve some of those things that this committee wants to improve in post-secondary education, and in no way at all to cite K through 12 or PK through 12, because I think we're actually doing a very good job in those budgets in this committee.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be supporting this budget that comes out here today, in part on a little faith that some other things are going to have to happen. fact that it'll be a day or two before it gets to the floor, in which case, if some of those things haven't happened, we'll have some opportunity to rail a little bit on those issues at that time. But I am, as I look at the education budget and this whole arena that we're dealing with from K-12 on through university education, I'm still very distressed. I'm distressed that we are not making an investment in education. We are not making the investment in education. When Senator Deckard and I first came to the legislature in 1997, or somewhere around that particular time, we were... See, you were not out of college yet, were you?
87.
I don't remember much from 87.
We were, as a state, as a state, we were committing 60%, plus or minus a little change, of the general fund revenue to education. And I remember that the good senator and I both, at that time, questioned whether we were adequately funding higher education. We've dropped 6% in the total package of education out of the general fund. It's gone someplace else. And it's not the position in this particular committee to talk about where it's gone. The simple reality is that it's gone. It wasn't on your plate for us to deal with. We're lagging far behind our neighbors. You know, I've said this before, and it will be repeated here again today, in terms of what we're putting into higher education. You can go to the University of Washington as an in-state Washington student for $1,000 a year less than you can go to the University of Oregon as an in-state Oregon student. You can go to the University of Idaho as an out-of-state Wichita student for $2,000 a year less than you can go to the University of Oregon. You can go to the University of Idaho and get all your classes and graduate on time. We're simply not making the investment that we need, and we are constantly told, not by legislators from some Hicksville, Eastern Oregon, but from the business community, that what we need to have if we want to compete in the 21st century, and we're nowhere close to getting out of the 20th century, we've backslid from that. But if we want to compete in the 21st century, we've got to make the investment in the post-secondary education, and it has to be a significant investment. Every year we fail to do that puts us one more year behind, and I fear that's a geometric curve instead of an arithmetic curve. I will support this budget, but I... must once again, respectfully, Mr. Chair, point out that we are not yet at a point of even starting to do the job for post-secondary education.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
You have to say something now.
I'm compelled at this point.
So you have to quote some dead philosopher or something.
Yeah, that's right.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have just three brief comments. First, I appreciate the sentiments of others on the committee who would like to see a more holistic view of the budget for higher ed. Secondly, I appreciate the add-backs that we've discussed and will presumably agree to in the next few moments. I was especially concerned about the lack of funding for child care on campus. And I hope that, given that there are approximately 420 students involved in those programs now and over 1,000 students on waiting lists. Thirdly, while I appreciate the concept of the shared responsibility model, I'm concerned, along with my state senator and the good representative from Lane County, about the notion of providing tuition support in this manner without a concurrent understanding that we'll be fully funding community colleges and the OUS operating budgets. And with that said, I'll be a courtesy yes on this budget.
Thank you, Representative Edwards. Senator Walker?
Yeah, I just needed to respond. I always appreciate the oratory, Representative Johnson. I just would like to gently remind you that we are the only state in the country that has a kicker. Absolutely the only state in the country with a kicker that sends all this money back. And this year is the first time we've ever been able to create a rainy day fund. So Oregon has not been investing in itself in a savings fund. We've not been finding ways to change our tax structure. So this is my help for my good friend Senator Morse. We've got a long way to go. We have a long way to go. But I think this budget, this session has been has seen some significant strides in funding education that we've never seen before, and I agree with you. We had a long way to go, but I think we're making progress. And take a look at what Washington State brings in terms of revenue and how much they don't send back and give away.
Thank you, Senator Walker. I'll be brief too. I just wanted to say two things. One is there's also the opportunity cost, and I think I'm very excited about the concept of the shared responsibility model. And this committee is such, you know, ways and means, what you do is how much does it cost? And I understand that's what our job is, but I think if someone came before us and said, I have a cure for cancer, our first response would be, yeah, but what does it cost?
that's what great. Performance measure.
Yes, exactly. So there's also the opportunity cost, and with the lack of affordability for higher education, and I would say especially at the community college level, where it's supposed to be, at least my understanding of what a community college should be, is really a lot about opportunity, and the tuition should be as low as you can make it while running the institution. We are in a particularly problematic position in the state of Oregon, so I would echo what Senator Devlin said in terms of lobbying our colleagues as we go forward, because next week we're doing the OUS operating, you know, Department of Higher Ed, and I think the pressure that we have had has affected the budgets that we have passed, and going forward, I think the pressure on our leadership and our colleagues is going to be critical so that we can get better numbers for capital and operations for post-secondary ed, which is what we need. So. Okay, so with that, I'm noting objections from Senator Starr and Representative Morgan. Are there any other objections on the motion for... No? Okay. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Devil.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 5044 as recommended and amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Devlin has moved House Bill 5044 as recommended and amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections? Representative Morgan. Senator Starr. Okay, and two objections, Representative Morgan and Senator Starr. Further objections? Seeing none. Motion carries.
I need to
Frank, I did your
question.
Senator Walker, did you want to carry, or Senator Walker, did you want to carry this to the full, the Senate?
I never carried a budget bill on the floor. Sure, I can handle that.
Okay, and then, so Senator Walker will carry to the floor of the Senate, Senator Devlin to the full, and the chair will carry it to the House.
Four. Oh, yeah, instructed to remove our notebooks now.
Yes, please. Tomorrow, and with that, I close the work session. Colleagues, tomorrow, please, tomorrow, we're doing two things. Just minor things. You're doing four things. Well, two, the little thing called the State School Fund and the School Improvement Fund we'll be voting on tomorrow, and the Department of Education budget. So that's the plan for tomorrow.
On time.
And the mentoring bill.
I think we're going to have floor session at not till 4:30, so we should be fine.
4:30 on Thursday?
Probably.
Okay.
We didn't have floor session.
I have a conflict at 4 o'clock.
You have a conflict at 4 o'clock. Okay, well, we can pass the largest budget, in an hour, and then we'll go.
I think we should be fine.
Okay, with that, we are adjourned.
7 billion dollars.